American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Tuesday, October 25th, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the hungover edition, with the WOG Global Sit Rep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this program, you are too. And you can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you can currently get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Osprey Radio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit, including sneaking into nightclubs and playing it in the DJ booth when everybody is trying to dance. Had a good weekend myself, got to tell you, everything went over pretty good, managed to get out there. Went over, did, you know, some family birthday stuff. The birthday's good. I'm 32 years old now, got to say, feeling 32. This is probably one of my better birthdays. Better birthdays, what did I get? The loot coming in, personally. What did I get for my birthday? Well, let's see. I got some gift certificates, which is always good, to a local bookstore. So I got about $75 worth of books, which, realistically, I mean, there's nothing better than books. I mean, realistically, I know that I'm kind of a book fiend. I've got a problem when it comes to books. And I really, you know, I have a to-read pile that's stacked like a Ghostbusters segment. But, you know, that's okay. That's all right. Then later that night, I had a couple buddies of mine who I work with show up. You know, and brought over their M14 for me to have a look at, which, let me tell you, if you happen to live in Canada, wow, there's a really nice M14 for sale from Marstar for $300. And, you know, it's actually supposedly, now I'm going to get a lot of hate mail on this, but it's better than the Springfield Armory one. Without geeking out too heavy on the guns, that's all I'll say about that. So after looking at that, I cracked open a bottle of really good palm leaf Slivovitz that Captain Whitebread gave me. And then we took to the night and wound up, you know, at Denny's at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that, eating greasy food. Now, I've determined, now, this has been a long time since I went out drinking, so I'm going to talk about a hangover cure, which you're not going to like, but I'm here to tell you, is pretty darn good. Now, I know from my previous drinking experience, the number one thing you got to do is you got to get some fluids back into you because you're dehydrated. And juice is good, too. So what I did for my particular hangover, let me tell you, I was tying one on, okay? I was giving her heart. I had some organic apple cider, which was, you know, I got in this big glass jar the other weekend. So I was thinking that, yeah, you know, there's natural sugars in that. Your body is missing sugars, right, because the alcohol takes that out of you. So I drank a bunch of that and drank about, oh, I'd say just shy of 4 liters of water in the morning. You know, I woke up, you wake up early and you're feeling all like crap. And then, you know, you drink a little bit and then you go back to bed. And I got up about 10 o'clock in the morning, threw on the jogging pants and went for a run and did 8 clicks. Now, bear in mind that I started with kind of half walking and half running 3 kilometers, and it's taken me quite a while to work myself up to 8 kilometers. But anyway, so I went for my usual, you know, standard run and threw on my shirts and everything. But my logic was to sweat out the alcohol. That's the plan, you know, because I figure, you know, a lot of the Army guys, they'll go and do that. Next morning, they get up, they go for a run, and they can sweat it out. And I got to tell you, as creepy as this sounds, I felt fantastic. I mean, the first 4 clicks were, like, you know, pretty nasty. You know, it was all about just, you know, keep moving the legs, Sean, keep moving the legs. But after that, you know, I'm here to tell you, the hangover cure is to drink just an ass load of water, just, you know, load up on the water, and then go for a run. Seriously, just run off the hangover. And maybe, you know, and I'm not trying to be all hard, more hardcore than now. It's not an easy thing to do, but if you can do, like, a decent run and get a sweat on, or maybe not run, maybe if you cycle, anything that would make you sweat, like get a good, you know, workout, build up your metabolism, burn it all off. It's pretty okay. And to add to that, I've been kind of fighting off a cold, too, because I remember the other day I was mentioning I got a bit of a tickle in my throat. I'm sort of fighting it off now. But I find that, you know, when you have a fever, right, the whole reason why you have a fever is your body's speeding up its metabolism to try to burn off whatever viruses it's got in its system. So I'm thinking that, you know, somehow maybe doing the run, you help with the metabolism, they heat up the body, maybe you can run off, like literally like go for a run and therefore run off like a hangover, run off a cold, just run until, you know, you can actually run it out of your system, which is a pretty cool concept. I don't know if it's true. Maybe somebody's out there got a little bit more knowledge than I do. Get back to me. Tell me what you think. Tell me if you think I'm full of it. But let's get into some feedback right off the top. Dear Sean Kennedy. Actually, didn't really see Dear Sean Kennedy. It said, Sean Kennedy, this is a note in regards to your statement about abstaining from religious debate. In my opinion, that may be a bad idea. There is a religious war in this country, and it's important to understand what, who, and why we are fighting in this war. Because in the first place, there are no deaths in this war, but it certainly affects everything in our daily lives, regardless how small. And with that, I want to make a statement regarding Christians in general. That's pretty generalized stuff here. Wanting to be a Roman Catholic priest at an early age, I studied very hard until I came to the corruption and hidden secrets held by the church. Now I'm a pagan, but I still respect the religion in their beliefs and philosophy. I would like you to know that most Christians don't even understand why they're a Christian, and that those that do use the reason, and those that do use that reason to their own advantage. The core of the religions of Christianity and Buddhism are exactly the same, apparently. Question: how did Jesus save, or what did Jesus do for you? He died for our sins, apparently. What are sins? What sins? The original sin. What is the original sin? Sins born that with Adam and Eve had. How did Adam and Eve receive the original sin? They ate from the tree of knowledge. Which, I have a huge problem with that anyway, because I'm like, God wants us to stay stupid, so, you know, Adam and Eve try to, you know, get smart, and God hates that. That whole, you know, the what's implied by that is just retarded. Question: what happens after they ate from the tree of knowledge? They found themselves naked, felt guilt, and the animals would no longer let them slay them for their meat or what have you. Now, that's fucked up all on its own. But anyway, question: does that suggest the birth of consciousness? Then you're supposed to be quiet and think about that. So now, with both religions of Buddhism and Christianity are designed to remove the guilt we feel, live day to day through our lives, Buddhism handles this through the Noble Eightfold Path and puts responsibility on the Buddhist, while Christians put the burden on Jesus, which relieves the Christian from any responsibilities, relieving the problems of religion in the modern day. Yes, we need to eat. Yes, we need to build. But animal extinction, pollution, and global climate changes are not a burden on their soul anymore. Some Christians actually use this to their advantage. We need to understand this if we are to win or debate a statement we make involving the Christian religion. Hope this helps, and may the wind speed your ways. And that's from Gum. Now, this is very, very nice, but the reason why I say to abstain from religious debate has got nothing to do with this. The reason why is because it's kind of like wrestling with a pig. After 3 hours, you realize the pig likes it. You see what I'm saying? It's like arguing about religion, okay, especially with Christians and stuff like that, is like it's kind of like arguing who would win a fight between a Marvel superhero and a DC superhero. Okay, it really doesn't matter because neither one of them really exist. Okay, it doesn't exist. Now, what this is, all religion is a meme to be able to get you to live your life. It's a form of an operating system. Okay, that's all you got to have there. Now, the reality is that right and wrong, the only difference between right and wrong is really, on a global scale, the number of people that agree with you. If you're in Morocco, say, it's totally okay to, like, you know, stone your wife to death and light her on fire just because you're bored with her or some shit like that. Okay, whereas in North America, that's, you know, generally frowned upon. You know, no one really digs that kind of shit. So it's the really sad part here is that right and wrong, good and evil, is a construct. I draw your attention to, like, Nazi Germany, where we had death camps, okay? And these death camps, now, we tried to quell our guilt afterwards by executing the Nazi heads and all the rest. We hunt these poor guys. But you got to bear in mind, not to say that Nazis are poor guys, and they should all be hunted, without a doubt. I'm not saying that these poor guys, you know, they're not poor. I mean, they deserve to be killed. Make no doubt about it. As a matter of fact, I think it'd be kind of a personal triumph if I could catch a Nazi myself, like an original, you know, good, badass motherfucker. But anyway, so we hunt these guys down and we kill them, you know, the high ups, and we claim, you know, that somehow makes it better. But you got to bear in mind, these death camps were massive. Like, Auschwitz was huge. Who built these death camps? Who designed them? Ralph Lauren designed the SS officers' uniforms. There were so many people involved with what was going on with the death camps. And everyone's claiming, oh, we didn't know. We didn't know. You know, all the surrounding towns around Auschwitz. Oh, we didn't know that there was a death camp there. We didn't know that. We just saw trains of people going in and ash snowing on the towns. We just didn't know that they were killing everybody. We didn't know that. Give me a fucking break. Okay, give me a break. Everybody knew. Everybody knew, and they did nothing. Now, clearly, you know, mass genocide is a bad fucking idea. Okay, this is like, I would say this is a bad idea today because I was raised in a culture that thinks that, well, mass genocide is a bad idea. But if I was raised in Nazi Germany and the Fuhrer there and all that shit, I'd be like, wow, you know, mass genocide. It's just, you know, the gradual retaking of our race and all this other bullshit that, you know, gets fed to them. Humans are not divinely inspired. I hate to tell you this, but humans are not divinely inspired. We are easily led, easily manipulated by what? By media. And the Nazis were the first guys to discover that. They kind of steeped in ritual and religion and all this shit. They mixed it up with politics. And they developed the Nazi Party, which the rest of the world looked at, especially modern times. I mean, if you look at what's going on in the United States right now and look for the parallels for Nazi Germany, it's beyond frightening. It's into the stark, screaming, terrifying region. So you've got to understand that religion, on the whole, is a bad concept. What we need is you need to have cognizant thought. You need to have your own system of code and ethics that you follow that allows you to coexist in society with other humans. Okay, without, you know, making shit up about, you know, some great big, you know, spirit in the sky kind of a thing. All right, now, it's a dark time we're living in right now because this is a transition. We've got more things invented in the last, you know, 30 years probably than the history of the fucking world. So you've got to look at that and go, okay, you know, we've got so much transition. Technology is racing ahead. It's racing ahead so fast. Religion is now facing its own extinction. It's going, oh, my God, we're going to be left by the wayside because nobody believes in God anymore. Everything's dominated by market. We all worship the dollar, which we do. We've created new gods, which are the corpolitics. You know, Starbucks. Wait, point to Starbucks. There are Starbucks outlets, which are essentially temples. You go in there, you worship with your dollars, you get your caffeine high, and off you go on your day. Most of your, you know, instead of, you know, heresy now, you have talk against the company. You know, you're accused of being a saboteur and things like that. These you know, ancient crimes against religion have been translated to crimes against the state and the core political state or the corporation because we're all slaves to market because we need money to survive. Now, that's just, you know, the way shit is. It's like that, and that's the way it is, and there's not much you can do about that, but you do have to recognize that that is the way the world works. Now, to go backwards, because every human, when they become totally, you know, out of whack and they're all wobbly and they don't know what the fuck's going on, they reach back in time to a time when they understood what the hell was happening. And so, you know, this is where we get into religion, because religion finds us a nice, you know, cushy way to, you know, outline where we are, gives our brains a nice break, allows us to feel a certain way, and make decisions based upon our own, you know, thought form and so on and so forth. It gives us an operating system, essentially. But the fact that the operating system is flawed makes no difference, because as long as it, you know, gets you through the night, you know, whatever you believe in, that's what you got. Some people believe in love, some people believe in this and that and the other thing, and you can take certain strengths from that. But at the end of the day, there is the truth, and the truth is there was no Adam and Eve. There was no fucking Garden of Eden, okay? There was not one there. Buddha, you know, the guy never even wanted to have a religion named after him, okay? He was like, they're supposed to be, he said to have no idols made about the guy. But people are fucked up. People want to follow. And that's how, you know, Buddhism has evolved. And now we've got, you know, Buddhists thinking the world is shit and all the rest of it. Realistically, there is, you know, just like the song says, all is the self, all is myself, all is you and yours, and there is nobody else, man. You've got to look after number one. Now, granted, you know, there's that whole think globally, act locally concept, which is nice and wonderfully liberal and idealistic, but it doesn't really fucking work. Okay, all it is shit that, you know, well, a lot of people have thought up to try to, you know, occupy their time. And unfortunately, believe you me, I have tried to do the liberal mindset. I really have. And I'm not saying that I'm going to, you know, throw off, you know, go sailing into the right-wing territory of just, you know, market and that's it. According to all the political tests I've taken, I'm becoming very centralist. But we need to be rational. We need to have, you know, a code of conduct that says, well, we can't just massively exterminate people. But you have to be able to exterminate certain ideas. You have to be able to take these concepts and go, right, this is fucked. It's not working. Well, you can't tell me how to think. Well, yeah, dude, we have to tell you how to think, because if you keep running around thinking that you're a white supremacist and that you need to kill everyone, that thought form is bad, and we need to destroy that thought form because it's going to do nothing but cause further problems. Now, people go, well, you know, people have the freedom to do what they want. Do they? Do you have the freedom to do what you want? No, you're governed by cash, you're governed by society, you're governed by laws. Freedom is a concept, just like justice. There's no such thing as justice. Where the fuck's justice? You know, it doesn't exist in nature. It's a myth. There is no justice. Where's the justice? you know, Joseph Mengele, the blue-eyed doctor of death, right? Died on a beach somewhere in Argentina, walking in the surf one day. Arguably one of the greatest pricks to ever live, this guy. Now, I'd even put him worse than Hitler. This guy was a full-on piece of shit mutilating children for the government. Nazi hardcore psycho bunny. Okay, died on a beach. Where's the justice? There is no justice. Is it justice that all these poor people got fucking slaughtered down with Hurricane Katrina? Is it justice that the sick and the weak get eaten by wolves? No, there is no justice. There's only the justice that we choose to enforce. So, I'm sorry, but at some point, everybody's going to have to grow the fuck up and realize that, okay, you know what? The world is what we are going to make it, and religion and all the ashram and sweeping and fucking little bits of plastic in your mouth and prayer and kneeling and feeling shitty about it is not going to make the slightest bit of fucking difference. So let's get on with it. Let's fucking save ourselves rather than waiting for some guy who died on a cross 2,000 years ago to show the fuck back up and wreck the planet. All right, because we're doing a good job of that on our own. And if we don't stop, well, we're fucked. End of list. Now, hey, Sean, I guess you said on Monday's show that people who steal $1 million should be shot. And I'm not sure if I heard that right. Well, it's people who do over $1 million worth of damage or steal more than $1 million, whatever. This is for crime, right? I have to disagree with you. I think it's a better idea to give them a chance to make up the damage they've done. All right? If it takes them a lifetime to make up a $1 million of damage, be it so. If they won't do it, then they will be shot. Well, the whole reason why I say shoot them is because, well, if they're willing to steal $1 million and they're able to get away with it to some degree, they're pretty clever. And you also run to the problem of enforcement. You know, and people then seem to think, oh, well, you know, all that's going to happen is they're going to be told to make it up, blah, 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 blah. You need to make the punishment very severe so that people go, well, if I'm caught, I'm fucking dead. And there's not much coming back from fucking dead. So, Batacon, sorry, man, but you disagree with me. Now, this is classic. This is classic right here. Now, Batacon's a smart guy, okay? There's nothing wrong with this. I would disagree with him. He disagrees with me. But one of us, let's say, is going to come into political power. Now, how do we decide who comes into political power? Well, we could make it a democracy where it turns into a media war, okay? Whoever controls the media in a democracy controls the people. That's it. If you control the people, you control the democracy. So democracy is really kind of a myth, unless the mass populace is educated through a free education tool like the internet. Democracy would work if and only if people were accountable for their own education. So if people were like, only the educated are truly free. So if people were responsible for their own education, if people were able to, you know, motivate themselves to learn, have free expression, think and ideas and stuff like that, democracy would work. But in our mass consumer consciousness reality controlled by television, democracy is enforced by whatever the TV says. Think about how many cop shows are on TV. How many fucking cop shows are on TV, including like CSI and everything like that? Being an ex-cop or ex-military is the coolest fucking thing ever. Why is that? Why do we think that way? We think that way because of all the heroes and shit that we see in television. It's all from the God Box. Now, if you control the God Box, you control the people, okay? The religion is the new priest, okay? Or pardon me, the television is the new religion. It's the new priest. Whatever comes through the TV is what people believe. That's it. End of list. So what we got to do is we've got to, you know, sort of unplug from the TV and start taking accountability for our own, you know, thoughts and beliefs and all that kind of shit. Now, unless you, you know, and of course other people, they don't, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work to try to learn from multiple sources. We don't want to go out there and spend, you know, 2 hours a day reading. We want to have something easily digested that we can trust that will be fed to them. And a lot of people trust me. A lot of people disagree with me. And that's fine. I'd rather have you disagree with me so that you would go out and learn on your own. Mobile Digit, good guy, smart guy. Don't ever fucking shit yourself. Mobile Digit is a smart, smart guy. Okay, he believes that anarchy is the fucking way. Absolutely. He'd swear to it. Up and down, stack of Bibles. We're probably willing to fight for it. All right? Me, on the other hand, I'm 100% certain that that will not work. You know what I mean? He's a smart guy. We fuck around. We poke fun at each other and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's, I don't believe it's going to work. Now, we sit there and we could debate this, but he's not going to change my mind because I'm not thinking. I know this is as a fact in my mind, okay? That will not shift in my brain. I don't care what anyone says because my life experiences have shown me this. You see what I'm saying? Now, he could make the same statement back to me saying his life experiences have shown him that. So how do you determine who's going to win that? well, then, you know, we have some public forum and you see how many people you can win over. But just because, let's say he's a better speaker than I am, or I'm a better speaker than he is, you know, how do you know? How do you know that what you're doing is absolutely correct? And unfortunately, if you look at nature, there's only one way that things usually get determined. It's the strongest survive, and invariably it leads to war. And that's one of the problems here. You see, with this leads us right to this whole cultural problem we're having now, where you've got, you know, the religions of the world versus, you know, the military mindset of the world. The Islamo-fascist psycho bunnies over there all think that we're the great white Satan. And they really believe that. We have no souls, we're evil, all the rest of it, okay? Now, when you look at that and you go, okay, so their political will is such that we are not human beings. We're like demons and shit. So there's no sin in doing anything to us whatsoever. We're like less than shit, all right? But when you look at how we're taught to deal with them, we look at them and they go, well, they're just misled psychos. So we're trying to take the moral high ground and be like, okay, well, you know, and we get these guys and they're like, they'll do anything they can to destroy us. They're looking forward to dying so they can go be with their God. They're totally fucking insane. Now, you're not going to get through to these people because they understand that, you know, their God is on their side and all this kind of bullshit. And that's what religion does. That's the dangers of religion. That's why the Third Reich was as scary as it was, because it got a whole nation of people believing that they were ordained by God to be the master race. Now, that's terrifying. It's very powerful shit, but it's terrifying shit because it's rooted in a lie. You see what I mean? I hate lies. There is the truth, and the truth is measured by strength. Certain facts are out there. And, you know, if all these Islamic cultures are so fucking superior, where's their technology? Where's their fucking weapons? Where's their shit that shows them that they're the stronger, you know, species? They have very good families. They have very, very good families. Their families are huge. A lot of focus on family and stuff like that, and that's very, very cool. Whereas in North American culture, not so much. Everybody's a lot more focused on industry. So it's going to be interesting to see who comes out of this on top. Personally, I hope the West wins. Why? Because I'd like to see the death of religion, because we've all seen what religion does in the past, and I'd like to see it go by the wayside. I don't want all Christians to die. I don't want all Islamic people to die. I don't want all Jews to die. But everyone's got to come to the realization that there is no God, okay? We've got to come to that realization so that we can get our shit together, look at all men as brothers, realize we're all members of the same species, we need to look after our planet, and focus all of our efforts on getting the fuck off of it. Okay, so that's my, and yeah, you know what, we're going to need capital punishment to make sure that we can have the enforcement to keep our laws and ideas solid so that people just don't think it's going to be some serpentine way to weasel out of shit. You do have to govern with an iron fist, and it's unfortunate, but that's reality. There's nothing you can do about it. On to sort yourself out. Dear Sean, this is Toggler, and I have a problem. Here it is. I want to be a biologist with the hope of breaking the aging code. Now, as you can see, many problems arise, and this is not the least of which being the government. Will be the government letting me do, and obviously the question are people ready to live forever? I guess what I'm trying to say is, what should I do? Need your advice. Thanks. So the guy's asking me here, I want to be a biologist with the dreams of, you know, trying to make it so people can live forever. Should I do this? And he's worried about the government stopping him, and he's worried about other people trying to stop him. Well, clearly, you should do this. You know, you've got to deal with each obstacle as it arises. Luckily, we have the internet out there. And the proof is in the pudding. If you were to, say, get together with people, like let's say you found a way to make people immortal, okay? Holy shit. You know, he develops an injectable needle. You know, I got the injectable needle here, and you're immortal. Well, just by the process of finding like-minded individuals who believe in all the stuff you believe in, you can outlive your enemies. You see what I'm saying? So, yes, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, don't be afraid. Don't make a decision based upon fear. You know, it's like saying, hey, should I figure out how to be in the world? Are people ready to live forever? Well, you don't know because you're not all people. Are you ready to live forever? Is somebody else ready to live forever? Well, then fine. You see what I mean? Now, you know, personally, the secret to getting to live forever, I think, is to get into space. Because, I mean, if you could get rid of aging, shoot up the astronauts with this shit and fire them off into space, make sure they got enough kit to keep them alive. I mean, there's a lot of options there. You know, it's pretty good stuff. But in answer to your question, Toggler, abso-fucking-lutely. anything that advances the species on the whole is a good thing. Now then, on to the news. In secrecy news sent to me by ZineTwin, secrecy is perhaps the most consistent trait of the George W. Bush presidency. Whether it involves refusing to provide the names of oil executives who advised President Dick Cheney on energy policy, prohibiting photographs of flag-draped coffins returning from Iraq, or forbidding the release of files pertaining to Chief Justice John Roberts' tenure in the Justice Department, President Bush seems determined to control what the public is permitted to know. And he has been spectacularly effective, making Richard Nixon look almost transparent by comparison. But perhaps the most egregious example occurred November 1, 2001, when President Bush signed Executive Order 13233, under which a former president's private papers can be released only with the approval of both that former president, or his heirs, and the current president, so thereby making it totally impossible to get any president's notes out there in the open. Before that executive order, the National Archives had controlled the release of documents under the Presidential Record Acts of 1978, which stipulates that all papers, except those pertaining to national security, had to be made available 12 years after a president left office. Now, this is, you know, we put all these checks and balances in, and because there's no enforcement of the checks and balances, we just, you know, legislate the checks and balances out again. Now, however, Mr. Bush can prevent the public from knowing not only what he did in office, but what Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan did in the name of democracy, although Mr. Reagan's term ended more than 12 years before the executive order. The Bush administration has filed paperwork in early 2001 to stop the check, and thus his papers fall under it. Bill Clinton publicly objected to the executive order, saying he wanted all of his papers open. Yet the Bush administration has nonetheless denied access to documents surrounding the 177 pardons President Clinton granted on the last days of his presidency. This action raised questions and fueled conspiracy theories. Is there something to hide? Is there more to know about the controversial pardon of the fugitive financier Mark Rich? Is there a quid pro quo between Bill Clinton and the Bushes? Well, yeah, clearly they're buddies. They hang out together. Is the current president laying a secrecy precedent for pardons he intends to grant? Well, not only that, when you look at all the other shit, like the Downing Street memos and stuff like that are hitting the turf, and bear in mind that his dad was the head of the fucking CIA, none of this is really all that surprising. The administration's effort to grandfather the Reagan's papers also, under the act, also raises a red flag. President Bush's signature stopped the National Archives from a planned release of the documents from the Reagan era, some of which might have shed light on the Iran-Contra scandal and illuminated the role played by the vice president at the time, George H.W. Bush. Oh, look at that. What can be done to bring information to light? Because executive orders are not acts of Congress, they can be overturned by future commanders-in-chief. But this is a lot to ask of presidents given the free pass handed them by Mr. Bush. And it could put President Hillary Clinton in a bind when it comes to her own husband's papers, which a lot of people are thinking, is Hillary Clinton going to run for president? You know, personally, I think that if someone you want a sure win for president, you know, you want a just an open and shut presidential candidate for sure going to win if they run, Oprah. If Oprah ran for president, she would be in a fucking heartbeat. In a heartbeat, she'd make it in. You know how many people Oprah controls? I mean, how many people don't even vote? But if she got on her show and started talking about, you know, running for president and stuff like that, you know, being the first black female president of the United States, holy shit. Could you imagine? I bet you Oprah would win that sucker. But of course, you know, and maybe she'd be good. I don't know. You know, we get so cynical now, we don't even believe that the president is even a noble position anymore. It's kind of sad that that's the way it is, but realistically, that is the way it is. No one believes in it. The American dream has turned into some kind of twisted nightmare, and it's sad. It is sad. But what do you do? In Afternow news sent in by Archangel, the trained wasps are contained in a cup-side device called a wasp hound. Now, this is the concept of using wasps to hunt, explosives. This is messed up. But anyway, these trained wasps are contained in a wasp-sized device called a wasp hound that is capable of sounding an alarm or triggering a visual signal, such as a flashing light, when the insects encounter a target odor. The sensor is cheaper to use than trained dogs and more sensitive than some sophisticated chemical detection methods, including electronic noses, researchers say. The experimental device is described in a study slated to be published in the January-February issue of Biotechnology Progress, a joint publication of the American Chemical Society and the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. The idea of using unconventional biological sensors to detect target ogres is not new. According to the study leaders, Glenn C. Raines, Ph.D., a biological engineer with the University of Georgia, Tifton, Georgia, and Joe Lewis, Ph.D., a research entomologist at the USDA's Agricultural Research Service, also in Tifton rats, honeybees, rats, honeybees, fish, and even yeast have all been used experimentally to detect various explosives or toxins. We've now developed a prototype device that puts the idea of using chemical sensing wasps into a practical framework, and its possibilities are astounding. Now, that's good news, because if there's one thing that I hate on this planet, it's wasps. I fucking hate wasps. They're one of those creatures that if I could eradicate all wasps from the Earth, I probably would, because I just cannot stand them. But if we could use them like that, for some reason, just the whole, like, using bugs to find explosives, I mean, that's such a wild concept. You know, well, it's got to wind up in Newsreel. And like Archangel said, yeah, it's very after now. I mean, I never even thought of something like that, but it's a cool concept. In police state news, I'm sure that Alex Jones is wigging the fuck out about this here. I mean, Alex, he's kind of Mudhut himself. He goes always off about, you know, them working for dark forces or whatever. It doesn't really matter if the dark forces exist or not. If the people who are running the country seem to be believing in some great darker Satan they're working for, that's a problem, okay? But anyway, in police state news, all right, the U.S. military is planning a more rapid, robust role for active duty forces in responding to catastrophic disasters or terrorist attacks, or the threat of terrorist attacks. But being as anything is labeled as terrorist now, that pretty much gives the U.S. military carte blanche to do whatever they want. A senior Pentagon official said yesterday, describing the demand for large-scale military resources in such cases as inevitable. So it is now inevitable, by their own words, that, the military is going to be used in domestic situations. Paul McHale, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Homeland Defense, stressed, however, that the expanded active duty military response would be limited to rare mass calamities or attacks in which thousands of lives were at risk, such as Cat 4 hurricanes or terrorist strike involving chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons, which sounds like a nice checksum. But you got to bear in mind that, you know, anything can be, there's a threat there, we thought it was a threat, that's why they were searching, yada yada. I mean, they had troops going through people's bags in the subways of New York, you know, so it's not that hard to get something declared to be a WMD. Federal troops might also play a role in enforcing a quarantine in a case of pandemic outbreak of avian flu or other disease, McHale said. Although, initially the job would fall to National Guard forces under the command of state governors. We are looking at a wide range of contingencies potentially involving Title 10 forces, federal troops, if pandemic outbreaks or biological threat were to occur. Notice how they say pandemic outbreak. Now, normally, the government's never used the term pandemic. But this is interesting because they want this avian bird flu. This is what they're using to draw attention away from their own, you know, the shit that's going on inside of, people being charged, major government officials going to jail, shit like that. But now everyone's all terrified of, it's the bird flu, this flu that doesn't exist. It would make more sense to get freaked out over malaria because it kills 500,000 people every year. But no, we're going to fucking wig out over bird flu. In contrast, the Pentagon does not intend to take the lead in responding to dozens of major disasters such as floods declared every year, McHale said. And even in the catastrophic events, the Pentagon's goal would be to provide a rapid early response and then to quickly transfer responsibility to civilian authorities. Civilian authorities. So I wonder if these civilian authorities would include private contractors who make a business out of responding to this, like Blackwater and such. The planning for an expanded Pentagon role in domestic catastrophes comes amid escalating demands on U.S. forces, which today are not only fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, but are also carrying out disaster relief missions in Pakistan, Guatemala, and domestically along the Gulf Coast. And don't forget, things are heating up in Iran and as well in Syria, and China is getting on the map too. So, realistically, we're going to see a draft very, very soon in the United States. Now, in robotic surveillance news, this is a very interesting story sent in by Rogue Trooper. Last story was sent in, I think, by Zine Twin again. But let's see, robotic surveillance news by Rogue Trooper. Now, you're going to see a lot more of this. Listen to this. Tiny unmanned surveillance planes are being pressed into action for reconnaissance over Katrina-ravaged New Orleans, in what defense contractors call the biggest civilian deployment ever for the technology. This is interesting. This is definitely an example of things to come, to be sure. 10 of the unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, have been taking turns this week flying from New Orleans Naval Air Station and relaying photos of the devastation below to the Air Force. Now, why the Air Force wants to see devastation photos of New Orleans, I mean, you know, they could get these photos a million other ways, but no. This is just a nice way to introduce the concept of UAVs being friendly to the American people. The original mission for these UAVs, a new class known as the Evolution, an upgrade over the 4-pound Dragon-Eye reconnaissance drones used in Iraq, was to help in searching for stranded hurricane survivors, so they say. But now the planes mainly are being used to assess damage to oil, gas distribution, dikes, berms, and other aspects of the region's infrastructure, said Alfred Lampkin, director of operations for ISR Group LLC, which is providing logistical support for the planes maker L3 Communications Corporation. These UAVs are a far cry from their lineage. More robust cousins, such as the Predator that employed by the U.S. military's intelligence service and can fire missiles and fly all day long. So UAVs, I think, we're going to be seeing more and more of these used by civilian sector and law enforcement. Battery-powered Evolution planes, which can stay aloft for 2 hours, circling at low altitude, 500 to 1,000 feet, to capture finely detailed images with their miniature cameras, also have infrared capabilities for night missions that, and could be used for atmospheric sampling. And you need those infrared, you know, photos for taking pictures of the berms at night, which you're not going to be doing because there's no reason to do that. So these are drones going to be used for people surveillance, is what they're used for, at 500 feet. Although the UAVs traditionally have been eyed for situations considered too dull, dirty, and dangerous for human pilots, their workload is expected to expand in coming years because of the increased sophistication of the vehicles, computers, and communication systems. ISR and L3 say this is the largest civilian mission for the UAVs to date, but drones have been used in domestic skies before. The Border Patrol has sent UAVs to scan for illegal immigrants darting across southwestern deserts from Mexico. Remote-controlled planes are also launched for environmental studies and fire patrols. Isn't that interesting that UAVs were used to hunt people? And now UAVs will be used as mobile camera platforms. You'll be seeing more and more of this, naturally. More and more mobile platforms, okay, for surveillance of people. This is not a new concept. There's a lot of this stuff coming down the pipe. And I betcha you're going to start seeing, you know, people using these things in patrols where you've got these robots flying overhead watching the people to make sure that everything will be fine. Is it good? Maybe. Is it bad? I don't know. But that's definitely what I think is coming down the pipe. And to assist with that on a global level, we got some SATCOM news. Now, when you cross that last story with this story, you've got an interesting mental picture. Telecom giant Inmarsat is a week away from launching its second in a series of two super satellites designed to be among the most powerful commercial communications spacecraft in orbit that will beam broadband data and voice services to almost any location on the planet. That's some heavy shit. The I-4 satellites will serve as switchboards in the sky for Inmarsat's Broadband Global Area Network, or the BGAN service, scheduled for rollout in 2006. Instead of cruising for a Starbucks, BGAN subscribers can hit the road with a portable terminal as small as a laptop computer and surf the web, connect with the office or LAN at broadband speeds of up to 492 kilobits per second on a global level. This is universal Wi-Fi. And I wonder if that'll put the death of all other Wi-Fis out there, so now all Wi-Fi will run through these guys. Mind you, you won't be able to use it indoors that much, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, you know, Internet 2 will clearly be used by these guys. The network will cover 88% of the globe's landmass, said Chris McLaughlin, Vice President of Corporate Communications for Inmarsat of London. Whether or not that's true, that could all be fluff. Satellite broadband plans have crashed and burned before, notably with the multi-billion dollar bust of wireless pioneer Craig McCabe's Iridium venture. But dreams of blanketing the globe with ubiquitous high-speed connectivity die hard, and satellite communications providers are once again lining up to provide commercial broadband services to consumers and business. Interesting. I wonder how much that's going to cost. Denver WildBlue Communications launched a consumer satellite broadband service in June, offering rural customers a 512 kilobits downstream connection for about $50 a month. That's pretty inexpensive. Wow. WildBlue Communications. Interesting. Satellite broadband. Rural customers, 5 kilobits download. What's your upload, though? That's just it, right? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to get up speed. But still, that's not bad for down. Something to bear in mind if you're going to be on a boat, say. After an earlier false start, satellite giant Hughes Network Systems is preparing to launch a broadband service in North America called Spaceway by 2006, promising downstream speeds of up to 30 megabits per second in certain locations. 30 megs in certain locations. So that's the cherry speed. In this resurgent field, Inmarsat's $1.5 billion project will be one of the first to deliver broadband data and voice simultaneously with truly totable hardware using what the company claims are the most powerful and sophisticated commercial communication satellites ever launched. Now, I wonder about things like this in reference to what Sim was doing with his IPAC 6325, where he's putting Skype on it. Well, he's having problems finding a Skype app for it. So if anybody knows where you can get a good Skype app for the brand new compact IPAC 6325, that's a Palm phone combo. He's looking for something so that, you know, he can put Skype on his Wi-Fi, and then you've got Skype as well as a cell phone data. I mean, that's a pretty... These units are getting pretty high speed, and they're getting pretty almost necessary for those of us out there that want to maintain communications. Now, in media news, and this was sent to me by Data Maggot, and this reinforces my concept that I was mentioning before about he who controls the media controls democracy. But lawmakers want to spend $3 billion to make sure millions of Americans won't wake up with blank TV screens when the country makes the switch to an all-digital broadcast. $3 billion. The subsidy was approved Thursday by Senate Commerce Committee as part of a legislation that would see April 7, 2009, as the firm date for television broadcasters to end their traditional analog transmissions and send their broadcasts via digital signals. No more analog. Which makes me wonder, is there a way that we could get a hold of some of this analog equipment so you could start your very own analog broadcast stations? So guys could just throw up rabbit ears and pick up signals? Interesting. Digital television promises sharper pictures, better sound than analog TV, but millions of Americans with older TV sets rely solely on free over-the-air television. They'll need some type of a converter box to keep receiving their television service. Cable satellite customers won't be affected. Wow. So they're knocking them out, are they? The committee chairman, Ted Stevens of Alaska, said Congress needs to do something to help consumers with the older analog sets. An estimated 21 million households, if we're mandating this digital conversion, we cannot leave people behind because they can't afford digital television sets. Well, actually, you can, and nobody cares. So, you know, it's nice you say that you can't. But realistically, yeah, you can. The draft of a House bill would end analog transmissions on December 31st, 2008. Scary stuff. It does not mention a subsidy for set-top conversion boxes. Well, of course, no one's going to care. But that's what's coming down the pipe. That's the end of free media right there. No one can broadcast anything anymore. But it will open the doorway for more, pirate, radio stations and television stations and stuff like that. Now, in tech landfill news, and this is following that story, you cross with this one. This one was sent to me by Phoenix. Much of the used computer equipment sent from the United States to developing countries for use in their homes, schools, and businesses is often neither usable nor repaired, creating enormous environmental problems in some of the world's poorest places, according to a report being issued today by an environmental organization. The report titled The Digital Dump, Exporting Refuse and Abuse to Africa, says the unusable equipment is being donated or sold to developing nations by recycling businesses in the United States as a way to dodge the expense of having to recycle it properly. While the report, written by the Basel Action Network, based in Seattle, focuses on Nigeria in West Africa, it says the situation is similar throughout much of the developing world. Too often, justifications of building bridges over the digital divide are used as excuses to obscure and ignore the facts that these bridges double as toxic waste pipelines, says a report. As a result, Nigeria and other developed nations are carrying a disproportionate burden of the world's toxic waste from technology products, according to Jim Prockett, coordinator of the group. Now, it'd be interesting to get some education going for these folks down there, and this is a great reason for Linux. Like, there's a lot of these computers that are out there. I mean, rather than thinking about, you know, everybody stroking off, talking about how fast their computer is and doing video editing and all the rest of it, there's a lot of applications for a 4D6. Most of the satellites that are up in orbit right now are old tech. And why is that? It's because they're reliable. That's why that is. So it's interesting to think about how we could, you know, it'd be interesting to try to get some sort of an educational thing. If we could train people in these countries to take this equipment that's lying around in dumps and start building infrastructure, especially with things like Wi-Fi and stuff like that, they could actually start a free education system where you could teach people to learn, like educate an entire nation. Is there any money in that? No, because Africans in these regions have no money, so nobody gives a shit. That's the reality. It's unfortunate, and a child could think that shit up, but there's no money in it, so there's no drive to do that. Now, this is kind of a sad story, but it also reinforces the point I made earlier, where, let me just get through this. This is what's new in Nazi news, sent to me by Mookie. 13-year-old twins, Lamb and Lynx Gain, have one album out, another on the way, a music video, and lots of fans. They may remind you of another famous pair of singers, the Olsen twins, and the girls say they like that, but unlike the Olsens, who built a media empire on their fun-loving, squeaky-clean image, Lamb and Lynx are cultivating a much darker persona. They are white nationalists and use their talents to preach the message of hate. Known as Prussian Blue, a nod to their German heritage and bright blue eyes, the girls from Bakersfield, California, have been performing songs about white nationalism before all-white crowds since they were 9. We're proud of being white. We want to keep being white. I would wonder how you would not be white, you little freak, said Lynx. We want our people to stay white, and we don't just want to be, you know, a big muddle. We want to preserve our race. Interesting. Interesting. Using, like, little girls in this way. Lynx and Lamb have been nurtured on racist beliefs since birth by their mother, April. They need to have a background to understand why certain things are happening, said April, a stay-at-home mom who no longer lives with the twins' father. I'm going to give them my opinions just like any parents would. Interesting. April homeschools the girls, teaching them her own unique perspective on everything from current to historical events. In addition, April's father surrounds the family with symbols of his beliefs, specifically the Nazi swastika. It appears on his belt buckle, on the sides of his pickup truck, and he's even registered as his cattle brand with the Bureau of Livestock Identification. Because it's provocative, explains April of the cattle brand, to him he thinks it's an important symbol of freedom of speech, and he can use it as his cattle brand. Songs like Sacrifice, a tribute to the Nazi Rudolf Hess, Dippy's Deputy Fuhrer, clearly show the effect of the girl's upbringing. The lyrics praise Hess as being a man of peace who wouldn't give up. It really breaks my heart to see those two girls spewing that kind of garbage, said Ted Shaw, civil rights advocate and president of the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund. Though Shaw points out that the girls aren't espousing their own opinions, but the ones they're being taught, because the girls are minors. Now, it could be argued that people would say, well, what about Louis Farrakhan? You know, Louis Farrakhan spews all this hardcore, pro-black, anti-white stuff. And then you got these little freaks here who are all fucked up like February, spouting their white hatred shit. This goes right back to religion, okay? People are always trying to do this. Farrakhan does it because he knows how powerful it is. He crosses religion with some kind of weird racial notion, and he's trying to create, you know, this world power thing, you know. And now these girls are trying to use it to make money, blah, 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 blah. And this, all these concepts, be it Farrakhan, be it these kids, this is all bullshit. How do you stop it? How do you stop that? Do you take away their right to do it? Is that one way of doing it? Because I guess would that work, or would you just drive it further underground? I'm open to options over here. Okay, you can just get in touch with me at newsreel@rantradio.com. Today's daily hack is Breezy Badger. Very, very Breezy Badger. Thanks to Banker Progman. Very cool. This is a detailed description about the steps to be taken to set up an Ubuntu-based server that offers all services needed by ISPs and hosters. Mail server, a web server, DNS server, FTP server, MySQL, POP3, IMAP, IMAP's quota firewall, everything. Very, very cool and all free. Definitely a good way to utilize some old tech you got kicking around your house and then strap it to a nice Wi-Fi system. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This has been a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 71 people, 56 continuing subscribers from last month, plus 3 new subscribers, and 12 one-time donations. And thanks again to everyone for their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at randradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Emergency Broadcast Network, Telecommunication Breakdown. Very, very cool album. I'm going to leave you now with a track sent to me by Vavrick, also from Vavrick.com, called You Are God. A very, very cool track. You can't get it anywhere yet because I'm one of the first people to hear it. And, you know, in typical my fashion, I'm going to put it on the end of my show. Make sure you check out Vavrick and try it. These guys are amazing, and they really have got their head screwed on right when it comes to what they're doing with their art. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.